Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 243 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I'm Al, and I'm joined by...
Anton, and we're joined by... Well, we're not joined.
Well, we don't... Well, we kind of are joined by Mike. He's not sitting in front of a microphone, but you see, a strange thing happened this week. So we all know that Mike, as part of his day job, he does singing. I don't know if you've ever heard him, but he quite often does demos where he does all the male bits and all the female bits. He says he uses software to alter his voice. I don't think he does. I think he just sings like a girl. Nothing wrong with that. It's just what Mike does. But this week he had a bit of a mishap. He sung so high that he shattered himself into his component subatomic particles, which means that he's now kind of just drifting around in the ether, which, if you think about it, means we're probably breathing in Mike right now, which means I don't want to breathe.
Yeah, I won't lie. I love that, you know, take that audio bite and we just cut that down. It would be fantastic. But yeah, we've currently got a crack team piecing Mike back together. You know, and we'll have to see if they do it in the right order, though. And
it depends whether we get Pinky or the brain doing it. If it's the brain doing it, we're probably good. If it's Pinky, narf, we're going to get upside down Mike with sort of a nose in the back of his head and an arm where his leg should be, and it's all going to be terribly messy.
So at last, Mike will keep his lead in the quiz yet another week.
Oh, well done. See, I was going to bring that up when it got to your quiz time to say that without Mike on the show, that means he gets to keep his lead. But you've actually delved in there yourself and got in there. You're owning the fact that Mike is genuinely somehow weirdly beating you in the quiz.
Yeah.
How is this happening?
I'm not forgetting. It keeps me up at night. My reflection doesn't look the same anymore. It's a weird, scary time.
I mean, your hair actually has got wilder. I presume that is a reaction to the stress of Mike being in front of you.
What? No, I've just been had a late night on Wikipedia. You can do like a page every minute, and if you do that for like about 5 hours, you learn things. So it's been late hours, and if you want to spend late hours listening to us talk absolute nonsense, Al, where's like the best place to go?
Well, that would, of course, be going to our website, specifically to a very definite page on our website, nsukp.co.uk/support-us, which leads you to our Patreon. I mean, you can just go to Patreon and search for NSUKP or Nintendo Switch UK podcast. That will probably get you there faster, but, you know, if you go through our website, it's pretty, and Anton puts a lot of love and care and attention into it. Have you put lots of love, care and attention into it recently, or is it in need of a bit of love, care and attention?
I will say, as Anton has put love and care into it's alive. It's a website, but yeah, could do with a fresh coat of paint. I think Squarespace has since upgraded to the point that we would have to start from scratch to make a new one. So maybe on a rainy day.
And we are not, by the way, sponsored by Squarespace. We must be the only podcast in the world that's not sponsored by Squarespace, and we still use their platform.
Yeah, like, to be honest, I don't think anybody's really wanted to sponsor, which is fine. You know, that's the point of having the Patreon, is, you know, it keeps the lights on. It means that we don't have to worry. It covers the bills and makes sure that basically, even if all three of us had the worst, you know, year of our lives and we couldn't do it, we could at least come together, chat about video games, and we don't need to worry about the gears that makes this machine work, which is...
So if I'm a listener right now, Anton, why am I going to give you £2 of my money? What do I get in return?
Well, firstly, you could listen along live as we're recording right now, and after we finish recording this, we do a bonus show, Last Call. You can listen to that both live and recorded, and on Last Call, we talk a little bit about absolutely everything. On top of that, you get access to our lovely Discord community where we have channels about literally everything. I see you've been reading and chatting in our little book club section of the Discord this week, Al, which maybe that's a topic for Last Call. We'll have to wait and see. And when we occasionally do have advertisements, which we somehow happen to have, you get them. You get the show without those. So I suppose that's... You're not hearing that work, but, you know, it's all part of the process. And you get our eternal gratitude. You get the show notes early so you can snippet what we read and the stories that we accidentally miss occasionally. And our eternal gratitude.
That only ever happens when Mike's on the show. He's very good at skipping stories by accident. When it's like he just loses track of where we are in the running order and just jumps over a story or two.
Oh, my favourite is, I think it goes in, but sometimes he, like, in the reading of it, so we'll get to the end of Turbo Mode, And Mike will be like, oh, yes, I remember this story. This was fantastic, wasn't it? Shame we didn't have it in the show. It's a wonderful mind.
It is. It truly is. Anyway, we should probably get into news. But before we do, very, very quickly, have you played the Switch this week?
I don't think I have, Al. I have picked up my PlayStation Vita and not put it down. I've played a lot of Tearaway, which is not even remotely tangentially connected to the Switch. So I clearly need to pick up the slack. Truly shameful.
We need Mike, because I haven't done much better. I have literally played a grand total of about 20 minutes of Bilateral this week, and that was just yesterday at lunchtime, because I thought, I've got 20 minutes, I could play the Switch. So I picked it up and I played some Bilateral, and that's all I have done on the Switch this week. I don't actually know what I've been doing. Actually, I know what I've been doing. We had Apple TV and it ran out yesterday, so we were just binge watching things before it ran out. So that's what I've been doing. That's why I've not been playing the Switch this week. So, with that dismal showing on our part, I think we should probably just kind of shifty along over to news and hope that nobody noticed that.
Tell us, the people want to know.
Cool. So, we're here now. News time. Leap Game Studios and Tiny Ghoul announced Dice Folk. Published by Good Shepherd Entertainment, it's a deck-building, turn-based RPG where you play both sides of the battle. It's set to release in 2024. Anton. What do we make of this?
Yeah, I thought the combat mechanic of having control over both sides of the combat was quite interesting. I think they're going to have to be very careful at how they balance it so that it isn't just, you know, choose the worst option every single time to make sure the enemy fails. But I guess with the slight kind of rolling of dice elements and that random chance aspect, you know, that does maybe balance it in some ways. It does have a lot of love and care into it. They've put out a great trailer with some kind of anime, kind of visuals in terms of these basically little Pokemon-like creatures. Al, it's an impressive little indie game.
Yeah, I can see why you're drawing comparison to Pokemon. I suppose visually, it's a bit Pokemon-y, in as much as you've got little monsters. They're called Chimeras. Go with Chimera. Chimeras in this game. Insert Pokemon, insert Chimera, whatever you want to call it. But the combat, as you say, probably the whole platform. Oh, I'm turning to Mike. I'm doing that hiccupy burp thing halfway through speaking. Well, oh, no. Someone needs to do it in his absence.
You've eaten the mic particles.
Oh, it's the mic. It's in. Oh, yeah. I don't want to think about that.
Ugh. You're in.
Anyway, back to the games. Less Mike, more games. it is a unique and interesting combat mechanic for this one. I've never really seen this before, where the battle really genuinely comes down to, in inverted commas, random chance. Now, okay, I don't know how random the random dice is. It could well have a proper quasi-random number generator built into the game, and that could be generating the dice. It may be fixed. I have not a clue. But it's been getting pretty good reviews from where I've seen it so far, and that leads me to believe that the game plays quite well. I just can't wrap my head around, as you say, the fact that you control both sides of the battle. You want to make your side super strong, you want to make the other side as weak as possible, but I presume the random chance element is going to work against you to balance that out, to make each battle feel a lot closer than it might be otherwise if you were actively, genuinely controlling both sides. And I mean, I know how I play. I would always be giving myself the biggest advantage possible and would probably get very bored very quickly. But that's just the way I am. It does look lovely. It looks really, really cool. I love the style, the visual, and the fact that we're getting something a little bit different. Very positive reviews on Steam, which suggest that it is probably going to be worth looking out for when it comes out later this year on the Switch. Up next, Evil Empire have announced The Rogue Prince of Persia. Being published by Ubisoft, we've not necessarily had platforms confirmed yet, so we don't actually know if we're getting this on Switch, but one might hope. It's described as a new hand-drawn rogue-like that is challenging but accessible. It's going to enter PC Early Access in May of this year. Now, before we go into this, we quite regularly talk about rogue-lites and rogue-likes. Anton, for those who haven't necessarily been with us that long, what's the difference between a rogue-like and a rogue-lite?
Yeah, so a rogue-like is you'll progress through the game, and if you die, you go back to the beginning. Rogue-lite, that's L-I-T-E, that would basically be you progress through, you die, and then you can maybe make a little bit of an upgrade so you're a little bit stronger next time. That's a style that works a lot better for, I think, less skilled gamers such as myself, as, you know, worst case scenario, if you can't get better, you can at least fail enough times that you get strong enough to take it on and complete the game eventually. Nevertheless, what are you thinking of the Rogue Prince of Persia? Because it's a very much a surprise. It was not on my bingo card for the year.
No, was not on my bingo card either. I mean, there's been rumours about this for a little while, to be fair. So we shouldn't be massively surprised it's coming, but it's looking really nice, I have to say. And the fact that they've described it as a challenging but accessible platformer does make me go, what does that mean? Because challenging is always inaccessible, and accessible is not normally challenging. How are they doing this balance? Is this sort of a ramping up difficulty thing? Are there multiple levels, or are they just trying to walk a very, very fine line? I honestly have absolutely no idea. In the trailer that they've released, we've seen a teeny tiny little bit of gameplay, and it's very un-Prince of Persia-ish. It's, as the description said, it's kind of hand-drawn look. It's very, very smooth. I mean, it's incredibly smooth motion, which I guess is ideal for a game like Prince of Persia. And it takes, I guess, that fundamental core mechanic and does interesting things with it. Are you feeling positive about this one?
Yeah, I'm feeling quite positive, and I think for at least myself, I'm feeling more positive about this than I felt for the most recent Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. You know, it's a little bit slower, it's a little bit more weighty, which I feel feels more faithful to the original 2D Prince of Persias. And overall, I think it's in good hands. It's getting developed by the team Evil Empire, which I believe they're best known for doing the Dead Cell games. So fairly confident it'll be quite well done here. And then the world, the colours, it's got some nice presentation, and they're launching it in early access. So it's only going to get better. And once it leaves early access, we can only hope that it comes to Nintendo Switch. But I see no reason why not, especially considering we've gotten the Lost Crown on Nintendo Switch and the kind of more recent or the last 3D Prince of Persia remake. So very impressed, very much a surprise. And I think as somebody that hasn't played as many roguelites as I would hope, or roguelikes as I would hope, hopefully this balance is as well done as they're claiming it is, Al.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Oh dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask a really dumb question. Rogue like, so that's the one where you die, you're dead.
Yes.
Is that not just traditional platformer that I would have grown up with? Admittedly, you had lives, so in this one you're going to get one life, but is that not just platformer?
Yes, it's very much so. I guess any old school game where there were severe consequences, you could consider roguelike. It's also worth noting that at least kind of in the time we've covered roguelikes and roguelites, quite often, you know, a roguelike will come out and be marketed as a roguelite, L-I-T-E. It doesn't tend to work the other way. So, you know, roguelite, L-I-T-E, is the kind of subgenre of roguelike. So there might be some light elements within of this roguelike. We will have to wait and see.
Oh, it's so hard to keep track of this. In fact, actually, I'm so confused by it, but at the same time, looking forward to it. I think I'm going to move on before we say like or light any more times. Ambertale Games has announced Amber Isle. Nothing to do with whiskey, albeit it sounds like it should be. Published by Ambertale Games for the Switch, it is a prehistoric life sim about starting your own shop. There's no release date for it yet. Without having ever actually played, what was the game that everybody played for
Animal Crossing? Donkeys?
Animal Crossing. Yeah, it's giving me what I imagine is an Animal Crossing vibe, but with cute little dinosaurs. Am I a million miles off here?
Oh, I think you're right on the money, Al. It is literally that. I think it is novel in the fact of it's pushing you down a store and commerce and slight business management elements. However, I must confess, it's just looking a little bit shovel-weary. It's not looking as polished and as charming as I would hope. I do love and support Team 17. They're not working. Oh, Team 17 are publishing it. There we are. Fabulous. I'm not lying. I do love Team 17, but they are just the publisher in this case. So I've not got the highest hope for this one. It's just missing that kind of flair and character to it.
Interesting. Because I was looking at the trailer thinking it looked quite nice. But actually now I've gone back, as you were speaking, I was watching the trailer going, it looks quite nice for maybe 5 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago. It's not... I see what you mean. I don't think it looks bad. I think it does look very nice. I think it... I wouldn't necessarily describe it as shovelware. But I understand your concerns. And I'm going to say something that I'm going to hate myself for saying. But I think Team 17 has maybe gone down in quality recently. I used to hold Team 17 in the highest regard. They made... they put out, I should say, amazing games. Think Worms, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that was all Team 17 in their heyday. I sort of feel a lot of the stuff that's come out recently has been not quite on that same level.
Yeah, I'm having like a look through some of the games that they publish, and you know, there are still some bangers in there like Dredge and Overcooked, but like for how many of those there are, there are just some kind of like ones that were meh in quality. So yeah, maybe not the shining examples they used to be.
And speaking of slightly confusing games, Nintendo, normally associated with very good things, and to be fair, this probably is very good, but it confused us all the last Direct. Nintendo has launched the Japanese website for Endless Ocean Luminous, revealing that the game will feature over 578 creatures. Players will be able to share world seeds with other players, so you can explore ocean layers together. The game's also going to include diver customization, special online challenges, a photo mode. This game baffled us all. It was kind of like bolted on to the end of the last Direct, where we suspect something else is probably supposed to be. And we all went, why did that get 5 minutes? We don't understand. Are you any more clued up yet, Anton?
I'm not, no. You know, it does feel like Nintendo are still giving it a fair attempt, which the last games did sell well, but they weren't, you know, normal Nintendo levels of a well-selling game. So a more niche franchise, but they're still giving it the full gravitas that they gave with those earlier entries. And I'm going to be interested to see how this one does. It's very niche. It is very, you know, of, you know, the immersion, and then the story gets very grand, very drastically, usually, as the last games go. So that is something to look forward to. But I'm interested to see that, you know, in our current market, when we've got so many more cozy games and there is, you know, an appeal to these kind of slightly more relaxing games, if Endless Ocean will do better than it did on the Wii, or is maybe just it was so simple that it thrived on the Wii in a way that it might not today. I'm going to be interested to see how many people we see picking this up and playing it maybe on the Discord, for instance.
Splishy splashy. I think I'll stick to Wave Race. I'm happier on top of the waves than underneath them. Actually, you know what? We need a new Wave Race. Where was the last one? Was there one on the Wii U? Or was the last one on GameCube?
I think it's GameCube.
Because there was one on GameCube, wasn't there?
Yeah, because we got Pilot Wings on the 3DS. And then...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we got one on the Wii. Which is a shame, because I feel like with the motion controls, it would have been a good fit. I think there was kind of slight homage elements in Wii Sports Resort, but I don't think we've had a Wave Race in a hot minute. Hydro Thunder. No, that's good.
I'm Googling it live as we speak, and there hasn't been one for quite a long time. Has there genuinely not been one? Oh, Wave Race Blue Storm. Mm. Yeah, it was in the GameCube. That was the last one.
Well, you know, they're going to run out of Mario games to bring to Switch eventually, so hold your fingers crossed.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on and talk about the BAFTAs. We don't often talk about the BAFTAs because, you know, we don't really talk about TV shows or movies specifically on this show. However, a couple of years ago, they introduced a gaming category. So now we're going to talk about them, and I have some issues with the BAFTAs. I'm intrigued to see if you have issues with the BAFTAs. Specifically, they released a most iconic video game characters of all time list, and I disagree with some of their choices, Anton.
Yeah, so You know, Super Smash Bros., for instance, has so many iconic faces. Very, very little of them have made it onto this list, especially from Team Red.
Yeah, and there is a weird order as well. So if someone said to you, name two video game characters, what are the first two that come to mind?
Oh, you know, being Sega, and you know, have Sonic in there, and then definitely, you know, Mario.
Yeah, neither of them is at number one. Neither of them.
Yes.
In fact, one of them is down in... Where is he? Down in fourth place.
It is a very weird list.
It is. So I'll go from the bottom up. So number 20th, Nathan Drake, Uncharted. Sure, fine. I haven't got an issue with that. Good game. Fine IP. He's rather generic. Okay, cool. Ellie Williams from The Last of Us. Again, I can see she definitely belongs in the list, but I kind of maybe not the most iconic. Fine, down towards the bottom. Kazuma Kiryu from Yakuza. Feels like a random addition already.
Yeah, like, I know, like, one or two people that play Yakuza. Beloved franchise. Yeah, that's an odd addition. That's a
it
weird
is an
one.
Odd addition. Astarion from Baldur's Gate, number 17. I've never played Baldur's Gate, but I appreciate Baldur's Gate is in the psyche at the moment. I understand why the character's there.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, it's very much of the moment, but we'll have to see how that lasts over the long term.
Number 16, Cloud Strife from Final Fantasy VII. I'm not sure where I stand. The game itself is iconic. Is the character that iconic? Maybe?
I feel like it's more the sword that's iconic, if anything.
Yeah, not sure we're staying with that one. Then down in a lowly 15th, but I feel she'd probably be higher, even though I never really played the games, is Crash Bandicoot. I feel that if you say Crash, maybe it's a generational thing, but I feel that Crash is one of these characters that everybody has probably heard of and could maybe identify.
Yeah, like I feel like every gamer could identify Crash, but I feel like the most iconic list, you should be able to, like anybody should be able to recognize them.
Yeah. Exactly. So then at number 14, we've got Solid Snake. Again, gamers absolutely recognize Solid Snake. Probably most people wouldn't, and I would strongly say that Crash Bandicoot should be higher up than Solid Snake.
Yeah, I think so. I think just you could look at the silhouette of Crash Bandicoot, you could not look at the silhouette of Solid Snake and figure out.
Exactly.
Maybe if you had a box, otherwise not.
Yeah, then we come to one of the ones that I feel quite strongly about is in entirely the wrong place. Down in a lowly 13th place is Minecraft Steve. I feel that everybody in the world knows who Minecraft Steve is because they've just seen him. They might not know his name, but they go, oh, that's a Minecraft guy. Surely that needs to be up in, like, I don't know, position 3 or 4, up there with the big guns.
Yeah, I'm on the fence with Steve because in some ways I'm like, absolutely, anybody can look at Minecraft and recognize Minecraft, but, you know... It's you don't see him in the game, you know. It's just the default skin. So
he's kind of the mascot of the game, though, isn't he?
True.
He just is.
Very much so. I guess he is on all the promotional art, but yeah,
all the merch, all the toy boxes, everywhere anyone ever goes and sees Minecraft, they're gonna see that character there. I reckon they might not know the name, but they know who they are. I feel it deserves to be higher up than 30th. Okay, number 12 again. Issue Pikachu. Again, surely Pikachu needs to be much further up the list, particularly when I read out the list. I'm hoping people will then agree with me, but am I wrong?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely, it's Pokemon is like almost as big as like Mickey Mouse in terms of recognizableness.
Yeah, and that Pokemon in particular. Number 11, Arthur Morgan from Red Dead Redemption 2. No, doesn't even belong on the list. I love that game. Arthur does not belong on that list at all. It's a generic cowboy. Nobody's going to remember him. I barely even remember his name. It was a great game. The character, not iconic.
Yeah, like, obviously, you know, I'm on the podcast. You know me as much of a gamer. I've not played Red Dead, and I don't not familiar with Arthur Morgan.
Yeah,
I know there's cowboys, but
number
that's
10. So number 10, Shadowheart from Baldur's Gate 3. Again, I've not played Baldur's Gate 3. Number 9, Kratos from God of War. How is Pikachu less recognisable than Kratos from God of War?
Yeah, and even then, like, the one that gets me out of this whole list is that the Shadowheart's on this list, because I've heard of people play Baldur's Gate 3, haven't played it yet, and I've heard of Astarion. I've never heard of this other person. is.
It is just a weird list. Moving up, number 8, Master Chief from Halo. Sure. Okay. Yeah. I don't think I've got too big an issue with that. I mean, he shouldn't be above, you know, the Pikachus and the Minecraft Steves, but he deserves to be roughly where he is, I think. Then at number 7, we have Link. Again, probably fair enough. By the time we get to this level, I think Link is reasonable to be there.
Yep, definitely.
Number 6, Pac-Man. I would argue should possibly be number 1 on the list. And I don't say that lightly. As much as I think Mario and Sonic should be up there, I think Pac-Man is more recognisable to more people than Mario or Sonic.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing I keep on coming back to here is, like, if you saw a silhouette, would you recognise them? And, well, Pac-Man is literally just a silhouette. So simple. You know, sometimes you just see a pizza that hasn't been... It's just, like, missing a slice, and you're like, Pac-Man.
Yeah. He is the definition of video game iconography. And then we come to number 5. I really don't get why number 5 is here. I wouldn't even have number 5 on the list. Number 5 is Sackboy from Little Big Planet. PlayStation IP. Moderately successful. It spawned quite a few games. But does not belong on that list. And definitely does not belong above Link. Or Pac-Man. Or Pikachu. Or Minecraft Steve.
Yeah, I'm absolutely there. I love Little Big Planet. I played the all 3 of the games, the carton game, the PSP, the Vita game. And then I think the last game was like at the launch of the PS5. And then there hasn't been much else Little Big Planet. But similar to Steve, it's the default. You put skins, you put outfits on Sackboy. And it's just not on those level with those other titles.
Nope, absolutely not. Then at number 4, we have Poor Sonic, who's been bumped all the way down to the lowly level of 4, and should probably be number 2 or 3. And then we come to the most egregious one on the whole list. And there's been some doozies. We've had some absolute crackers so far. But number 3 is Agent 47 from Hitman.
Yeah.
So, put him in silhouette, he's Captain Picard.
Yeah, you know, I had an English
He's
teacher just like him. I don't know what's so special. You know, as his character design, he's designed to be plain so he can put on different hats quite literally and blend into situations. And as well as that,
if you ask any member of the public who's Agent 47, most of them will look at you blankly. If you show them a picture, they will still look at you blankly. He is not on the radar. He doesn't belong in the list, let alone up at number 3.
Yeah, you know, I guess I would even struggle, because I think the iconic pit there would maybe be the barcode tattoo, but it's not the most hot franchise, and it doesn't have the prestige, I think, to really be that high on the list.
Nope, absolutely not. Then at number 2, we have, bless his little Italian heart, we've got Mario. He's the plucky plumber has made it to number 2, which leaves number 1. I don't know if I number 1 absolutely belongs on this list. Number 1 absolutely belongs in the top 10 of this list. Number 1 does not belong in the number 1 spot for me, but I'm intrigued to see where you think they should be. Number 1 is Lara Croft. Where would you put Lara?
I think maybe like in the kind of somewhere in the range of 10 to 5, 15. Like, I think a little lower. I think especially as the outfits change so much and the character designs change so much, and I think how they've characterized her has changed so much over the years. And yeah, you know, it just feels out of place. You know, I think you could dress up as Lara Croft and go down to Tesco and people wouldn't be like, oh my God, you're dressed up as Lara Croft. Go in a red dungarees, I'm pretty sure you'd get some comments.
So I think we should rewrite this list, and I'm going to say, I'm going to drop the bottom 10. We only need a top 10. So I'm going to say number 1, it should be Mario. Number 1 should be Pac-Man. Number 2 should be Mario. Number 3 should be Sonic. Number 4 should probably be, I'm going to say, Pikachu. Then number 4, we had number 5. Number 5 should be Minecraft Steve. Number 6 should be Link. Number 7 should be Halo Master Chief. And that's where we're going to end the list, because nobody else deserves to be on there.
Yeah, you know, I think very much on the same page. But, you know, even then, I'm thinking of stuff that I feel like is omitted. Like, I feel like Kirby should be on the list. I feel like Samus should be on the list. And kind of even just straying out of Nintendo, Spyro's iconic. You know, maybe they didn't want it to be too mascot-heavy, mascot-leaned, and, you know, I guess being cinematically driven, the BAFTAs. Maybe they have higher standards. Donkey Kong. Where's Donkey Kong? One of the oldest characters.
It occurred to me earlier in listening, and he went right into my head. I forgot Donkey Kong. Oh dear, that's worrying.
Yeah, Rayman. get the paddle from Pong. Everybody loves him. The car from Gran Turismo. So many memories.
Oh, I love it. All right, well, I'm now annoyed enough at the BAFTAs. I think we should move on. Pardon me. Let's talk about Nintendo, the 3DS, and the Wii U online services, because... oh, they've finally been shut down, which is kind of sad, Anton.
Yeah, you know, it's an end of an era. You know, I saw a lot of tech talks of people playing right up until the minute of the servers getting closed down. And the thing that's always amazed me is when I boot up my Wii U and you fire up Call of Duty Black Ops or Mario Kart or a variety of the online games on there, a lot of them still had people playing them, you know. There are some people that just don't have access to new consoles. I think the appeal of them, both consoles having free online, and, you know, it's not just the online component. You know, there are games that had just online connectivity in certain ways, whether that was just exchanging things with other players. And yeah, it's an end of an era. It also signifies for the kind of homebrew community, they needed the online capabilities to jailbreak these consoles, so it'll be interesting to see how long it'll take them to find their workarounds, Al.
Yes. I think, from memory, somewhere further down our notes here, we may even have something that's kind of already along those lines for the Wii U, but I don't want to spoil it. Let's come to that in due course. All right, our next story is YouTuber Naga hacks a Nintendo Switch OLED. They have replaced the 2GB RAM chip with a faster 4GB chip. Combined with overclocking, Naga was able to run The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom at 4K resolution and Mortal Kombat 1 with better textures. I actually genuinely am in awe of this. Not only have they managed to replace the RAM, but they also managed to play these games and do whatever they've had to do to upscale them or make them run better, because presumably if you just chuck the RAM in, it's not going to do anything by itself. They've had to be smart, Anton.
Yeah, I was blown away by this. One, the being able to go in there and replace the two RAM chips with two higher capacity and frequency chips is just very hard to do. The chips on the Switch board are absolutely tiny, and the kind of soldering that they would have to do to get that all work out and figure out that they actually work is amazing in that. But I'm very impressed that the Switch has been capable of it. Not every game is able to scale with more RAM, and you know, that was a lot of Naga's videos just showing some games that do not scale with more RAM being given to the console. And yeah, two of those games were Tears of Kingdom and Mortal Kombat 1. Mortal Kombat 1 just dragging in other textures from other versions of the game and still being able to run the game at 1080p 60 frames per second. But the fact that they gave the Switch some more power, and then Tears of Kingdom is able to run at higher resolution and is able to scale as well as it does make me hopeful for the future of what Nintendo hardware revisions would be. But I'm so impressed that a console that is less powerful than the, you know, 2013 Xbox One and PS4 could even run these games at, you know, 4K, and it's not a complete slideshow. It's like maybe like 20 frames per second. It's rough. But the fact it could even do it, I did not think that was possible on Switch hardware, Al.
No, I mean, it's insane. It's really, really cool. So this is going to come like as a terrible admission. Considering we've been doing this podcast for, I've lost track of how many years now, 5, 6, 7 years, we've been doing this for a while. I have no idea how long we've done it for. But I honestly didn't know the Switch only had 2 gigs of RAM in it. That makes what developers are able to do with the Switch, to me, all the more impressive. When you consider how much, you know, RAM is sitting in my Mac in front of me here, it's probably something like 32 gigs of RAM in there for the Mac, and the Switch has got 2. I was just looking up what the latest iPhone is. The latest iPhone still has 6 gigs of RAM in it, and the Switch has... That's mind-boggling. I know it's dedicated and it's all optimized to do one thing and one thing only, and that's play games. But that is so seriously, A, limited, and B, impressive what people can do with it.
Yeah, I will clarify. I think I've written the notes confusing. It's got 2 2-gigabyte chips. So this mod was upgrading it from 4 gigs to 8 gigs total.
Well, thank you for clarifying still, that. I'm still impressed, but less impressed than it was.
Still, mighty impressive. You know that, you know, going back to the 2013, you know, Xbox One, that was an 8 gigabyte of RAM console, and we've got modern handheld gaming PCs like the Steam Deck, which I think has 16 gigabytes of RAM, and you know, other devices like iPhones having, you know, 6 gigs of RAM, but then also with like dynamic storage and dynamic RAM allocation. So the Switch, you know, it's old, but what devs can get done with it is mighty impressive.
Well done, devs. Gives yourself a pat on the back from us. We salute you and take our hats off to you and anything else you can think of as a way of showing respect. Yes, respect. Speaking of respect, we should probably respect the news to an untimely end and move on to turbo mode. I don't know where I went with that. I sort of lost my train of thought halfway through and
Bodged
something together. Did I get away with it?
I think so. I don't think anybody noticed. I think it's smooth. Phew.
Nice. All right. We're still professional. This is awesome. All right. Turbo mode. Nippon Ichi announces Disgaea 7 Complete for the Japanese Nintendo Switch. Now combined with all the DLC and reaching a new story and gameplay mechanics, it's set to be released on the 25th of June. Nerial announces Reigns Beyond, published by Devolver Digital. It's a card-based choose-your-own-adventure game coming out on the 17th of April. Crypt of the NecroDancer is getting a Hatsune Miku update, adding Hatsune Miku and 15 new songs. The release date is yet to be announced. The next Ubisoft Forward conference is scheduled for the 10th of June, and following the final DLC drop, you can now buy Sol Cresta as the Sol Cresta Complete set for $22.49. Nintendo has been sharing Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door gameplay on X, that's Twitter, in case you're me, and it looks fantastic. Atlus releases a survey asking, do you plan on purchasing any sequels to Unicorn Overlord if they were to be made? Interesting. And purchases made by IHOP in America allow players to unlock an exclusive outfit for Amy Rose in Sonic Superstars. Nintendo uploads an ASMR Endless Ocean Luminous video to their YouTube channel, and Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line receives a bug fix that prevents the game from breaking on leap days. Princess Peach Showtime icons have been added to Nintendo Switch Online, and according to Bloomberg, top producer of Dragon Quest, Yu Miyake, has stepped down, with Yosuke Saito, I can say that, taking over. Dragon Quest XII has been delayed as a result of this. Super Monkey Ball Banana Rumble gets a new adventure trailer highlighting its epic story, and Nintendo has updated all of the European URLs, for example, moving from nintendo.co.uk, which makes sense and is nice and easy to remember, to nintendo.com/en-gb/stupidity. Total stupidity. Anyway, the Pokemon World Championship 2024 will be held in Honolulu, Hawaii on the 16th to the 18th of April, and following the closure of the Nintendo Network, a private SSL exploit has popped up for the Nintendo Wii U, allowing users to access Pretendo. I'm going to say Pretendo without mods. Pretendo is a free and open source replacement for Nintendo servers, preserving the online functionality. Hatch Tales will allow players to browse, play, and download over 2,000 fan-made levels of Chicken Wiggle from the Nintendo 3DS. And finally, Front Mission 2 Remake adds in a new game plus. I don't know what that means, Anton. I'm hoping you can tell me.
Yeah, so basically, new game plus in Front Mission 2 and any other game that will have it means that once you complete the game, you can start from scratch, but with your all the things you've accumulated and progression that you've got, and you start from the beginning, but all of the challenges and difficulty has been scaled up to match your new starting position. So you can continue
nicely
playing
clarified. Well done.
Infinitely. Forever. So, going through it, you know, there's some interesting stuff. I think the Hatsune Miku... excuse me. I think the Hatsune Miku update for Crypt of the NecroDancer was very nicely done. You know, very much kind of... They've kind of changed the music, it seems. Like, it feels suited towards the kind of tone of... Crypt of the NecroDancer, and I just thought it was slickly done, and you know, it's fun, it's tongue-in-cheek, it's not to be taken too seriously. Reigns Beyond...
Not gonna lie, I had to go and Google what Hatsune Miku was, because I had no clue. Do you want to explain it for other people who also may not have a clue?
You know, I'm familiar, but I'm almost tempted to get the Al adaptation. What is Hatsune Miku to you, Al?
from what I understand, it's the robotic slash digital, because it's all in a video game, character that was created in rhythm video games by a corporation to front their musical creations. So fake pop star is pretty much what I take this to be. Video game-based pop, fake pop star, yes?
Kind of, yes. The fake pop star bit, yes, and then the video game stuff came later. So it was like a software that you can buy to synthesize voices or synthesize a specific voice, and there's a character to go along with this voice, and then as anybody can make Hatsune Miku music, and we could have Hatsune Miku as part of the theme song for this show if we wanted. It's open to the people.
I saw it was described on Wikipedia as Vocaloid. I was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, there's a whole variety of these Vocaloids where it's basically, the idea of a synthesizer for a voice combined with this caricature, and this character that you can then have in your music videos for the Nintendo Switch UK podcast theme tune 2025. It's for the future. Nevertheless, so that DLC / update is very cool. It's nice to see Soul Cresta coming to a conclusion, because they did do a lot of DLC for it and it was getting pricey, so I like that they put it into one tidy pack. And then I've got to, hats off to the, versatility, the creativity of the Nintendo community for getting this new solution to playing games online. This doesn't seem to be a situation of, giving you free games or, open it up to homebrew. It's literally just the online services that were available before. Now you can play online forever. So Mario Kart 8, Splatoon 1, Mario Maker, you can play them all forever. And, it's very cool, but I am a little worried about the security of it. Hopefully with it being open source, any misdoings are being avoided and of that. But very impressive to see, and kind of a step to seeing what the post Nintendo Network Wii U and 3DS experience looks like moving forward. But that was about the highlights for myself, Al. What jumped out to you this week?
Well, I also kind of just had thoughts on the Pretendo server. It's obviously, it's free and open source, which means that someone is paying for it somewhere, because servers are not cheap things to own or run. And I have no idea how it's making money, because I'm going to presume it's not, popping adverts up. Is someone just got deep pockets who is just very kindly funding this because they want to play these games online? I have no idea how this has come about. I'd be fascinated to know where the cash is coming from to run this. The fact it is open source, though, you're right. I agree that should, in theory, help keep it relatively secure. Anything that pops up can just be fixed. And let's face it, if it's literally only being used for online gaming and there's no transactions going through it, there should be limited personal data going through it, which means you would hope that it should be a relatively safe platform on which to be gaming anyway. But I don't quite understand how they've managed to build this, because they must have had to get into the code of all the different games to figure out what it needed in order for them to all work. Because I know Nintendo has its sort of back-end cross-play, or cross-play is the wrong word, but back-end network play infrastructure, and I don't know whether they've managed to somehow get hold of that code and just replicated it with Nintendo's permission, or I have no idea how this has come about. I would love to know more about it. I'm actually going to see if I can do a bit of a dive into it after we finish recording, unless you haven't done any of these answers.
Yeah, I won't lie, the funding of it was a question that I had myself. I wonder if it's all open source, theoretically you would have the tools to host your own servers, but from how it's been described and discussed on their website and in news articles, it does seem like it's a fairly self-contained solution. So a lot of questions, but seemingly very still nonetheless very impressive. I've had to guess where it's all came from, as I remember there was that big Nintendo hack a couple years back where we learned all about some of the inner workings of the systems, and that was the one that had Star Fox 2. So that might be the source of it, but I do feel like if that was the case, that would be code that was owned by Nintendo, and Nintendo would have stepped in by now. But alas.
Oh yeah, that would be shut down within a heartbeat, because even though Nintendo aren't supporting it anymore, they do seem to be the kind of company to go, well, we're not doing it, but you're not allowed to either. They just, because they're so protective of their IP, and that technically would be their IP. So I don't know, I have a lot of questions. I am genuinely going to go and research that, because I'm curious. I also wanted to laugh at Theatre Rhythm, because this is basically harking back to a story we talked about back in March when we had Leap Day at the end of February, the Theatreism Final Bar game just disappeared. You couldn't do it online for a whole day because the servers didn't know what to do. It went down. So I think that's quite funny. Whether anyone's still playing it in 4 years' time, don't know. You'd like to think a game will have at least a 4-year shelf life, particularly given what you've just been saying about people playing old Wii U, Wii, GameCube games online, so sure. And then I just wanted to give a little shout out to Reigns Beyond. I think it looks cracking. I've not played any of the Reigns games before. They've all kind of been set in medieval world. This one is going to go into outer space with it, which is a nice random twist. And it looks quite good. It's kind of a narrative-based game, but you basically constantly flick left and right, a bit like Tinder. Flick left and right to answer questions, and whatever decisions you make drives that narrative. But it's a really, really simple mechanic. I think this looks really cool. I want to play this.
Yeah, it does look very impressive. One thing it is kind of holds me back from being super jazzed is it was an Apple Arcade exclusive, and it's very evident in this one where it is stuck to that 16:9 or 9:16 aspect ratio. So it's not the slickest port, but I'm very glad we've got it this way than not having it. So it's still delightful to have it on Nintendo Switch for a one-time payment. You don't have to pay a subscription for it. The choice is great.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Okay, well, that was probably Turbine Wood because there was nothing else in there that actually wanted to pull out. It was a bit of a... Before we were recording, you and I were both saying, wasn't the greatest news week? Yeah, there's nothing else I want to talk about. Are we done? We'll move on to rumours?
Yeah, I think we need to move on to the spicy rumours.
Spicy rumours. All right, rumours time.
Now, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
The South Korean rating board has rated Hollow Knight Silk Song. Hurrah! Finally! We've been hearing about this for so long, I actually genuinely thought it was out already.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest games we've been talking about on this show. Like, it was unveiled round about the time the Switch was unveiled, and has clearly grown arms and legs, as a lot of indie games tend to do. It's, you know, it's a passion project, it's a labour of love, and, you know, these are quite often getting directed by people that haven't directed a lot of games in the past. So, you know, it's a shame it's taken so long, but it's also fantastic that they've taken the time to make it everything it could be. And the thing that makes me super happy about them just this going through the self-creating rating board is it means it's nearly done. It's very close, and that we don't... Next time they show off, we're like, we're getting it. It's not a kind of case of, okay, now we need to wait another 5 years for it. You know, it's soon.
Hoorah! Finally! Because I forget, Hollow Knight. I feel like you were a Hollow Knight aficionado. Was it Hollow Knight that was taking up all your time, or was that something else?
It was Celeste. Got me. I really enjoyed that. Similar sort of era, but... Yeah, I give it a go.
Something more recently you played and you played to
Rogue
death.
Legacy 2?
Rogue Legacy, yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah, it's I have played Hollow Knight. It's nice. It is a roguelike, it's a Metroidvania, so not my favourite genre, but I got to...
All right, you may as well explain, we've talked about roguelite, you may as well explain a Metroidvania, just in case anyone else doesn't know what that one is either.
Oh dear, how do I explain this?
Good luck.
You know, you have a big open world... And you get tools and resources and upgrades at different places in the world that kind of, you might go down one area and not be able to do anything at any given time, but then go off somewhere else, get an upgrade, and then you're like, oh yeah, if I go back to that random part of the map, I can do something now because I've got the tools to do it. So very much the joy of it is, you know, the creativity, the problem solving, and just figuring out how to solve problems and by using the upgrades that you get and then having this kind of large, open, expansive world.
Excellently described. Wonderful. I did kind of sit there going, sounds a bit like the Lego games. Not really, but you know, the Lego games, you go back into a level and you've unlocked powers, you can do more.
You know what? It is, you know.
Not really a Metroidvania, but you know what? Kind
of. Yeah, a similar kind of oversimplification would be the Mega Man X games, where you can kind of complete them in any order, the game levels in different orders, get the upgrades, and it kind of changes how you can progress through it later. And it's, you know, that freedom that's the joy of them.
So there you go. Anton Explains. We love it. You know what? We need to record your little Anton Explains and put them on YouTube for people to Google. It's how they can find us.
Yeah, it does feel TikTokable. Little shorts.
Oh, what was a TikTok?
Al, don't do this to me.
Anton Explains TikTok.
Oh no.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about the last story of the week, or last rumour. Gameplay has been shared of Prince of Persia Sands of Time Remake. It's been shared by a developer with Insider Gaming. Originally targeting a January 2021 release date, this game has apparently undergone a complete reset. The development team is starting from the ground up with a complete graphical overhaul, new animations, mechanics for combat, and parkour. However, based on the footage shared, the game is still in an early stage, missing textures and assets, indicating that it is likely to be some ways off before it's released, Anton.
Yeah, this was my Hollow Knight of the Week, where I was like, I thought this one released already. Yeah, you know, they showed this game off at the E3, in quotation marks, of 2020. And the trailer, you know, it was very much the old game with slightly higher textures, running on modern hardware with, you know, a little bit more resolution. It looked good to go. But clearly, it wasn't hitting the goals for Ubisoft, and they had higher hopes, so they've taken it back to the drawing board and started from scratch, which, you know, I've got to give credit to Ubisoft. They have put out some lemons before. They have put out some underbaked games. So the fact that they've recognized that they can't do it in this case and have put the time in, and clearly a lot of time, and will be putting in more time still, is impressive to see. A shame that, you know, for the people that were hoping for it, because, you know, they announced it and are like, it's coming out in 6 months and it hasn't came out. But alas, I'm excited to see what Ubisoft has planned for this game and how high-end and bespoke they're going with it, because this could revitalize the Prince of Persia on the kind of AAA side of things. You know, they kind of stopped making AAA Prince of Persias once Assassin's Creed came along, because Assassin's Creed morphed out of Prince of Persia. So hopefully this can be a different franchise that can live alongside the other ones, and, you know, it's done to the standards that, you know, revitalizes it.
It does look like it's got good bones about it. I'm not going to lie. I know it's missing stuff because it's early development, and it's down, I think, actually at the very beginning, say this is alpha footage. We're nowhere near finished. But the fact that they've been given permission to show this is interesting, because for some reason they've decided not to keep it behind closed doors. They've gone, yes, we're making this game. And I wasn't entirely sure actually why they've made that move. That's an odd move for a games company to do, to announce a game this early and to show it this early, when, you know, they could have quite happily kept it behind closed doors. Nobody would even thought about it, because it has been so long since it was first announced. Nobody's sitting there going, oh yeah, I really want that game to come out, I want that remake, yeah. Nobody talks about Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake. It just wasn't a thing that anyone was caring about. But they've come out and they've gone, we're making this and we're doing it from the ground up. And it has, as I said at the beginning, really, really good bones. I think this has heft, weight. It's got a lot of solidarity. It feels Prince of Persia. It feels better, Anton. I completely agree. This is putting itself solidly in the AAA camp, and I'm pleased about that.
Yeah, you know, the footage that has came out or was shared with Insider Gaming was done by an independent developer. It wasn't done by Ubisoft themselves. So I almost wonder if it's like a move of like drumming up hype in the fan base so Ubisoft don't can it or something like that. You know, get the fans chatting, excited, and you know, anticipating more Prince of Persia, because it's been long enough that if Ubisoft cancelled it, you know, last week, we wouldn't have batted an eyelid and be like, oh yeah, I forgot that game was even coming. But here we are. They're clearly working on stuff. Hopefully it sees the light of day.
Yeah, I really hope so. It does look really, really promising, and it's not, I actually can't remember the last time I felt vaguely excited about a Prince of Persia game. They've all come along and have gone, eh, all right. This one actually looks really good. This looks like it's got promising foundations to it. So that's excellent, right? We've got no deal of the week because we've got no mic. And we've got no quiz because we've got no mic, which, by the way, in case we didn't mention at the beginning, he is winning 3-2, Anton.
You know, it's some days are harder than others. And
it's a struggle. It's a struggle. I mean, do you want me, Nick, he's probably not listening. Do you want me to sort of tailor the quiz to you next time round?
No.
Get back onto an even footing with him.
No, it's a fair fight. It's a fair fight. We'll battle till the end. And, you know, I think, to be honest, at this point, I should fall off on my higher horse. You know, it's a David and Goliath situation. It's what the people want.
I don't think anybody wants Mike to win, because his head will be so big that he won't fit through doors. He's going to get a sore neck, in fact, frankly. He's going to do himself an injury from his head getting so big if he wins this. We can't let this happen.
God, we turn him into a Funko Pop. That's season 7 right there of the podcast.
And on that image, I think it's time we wrap this show up. If anybody wants to get in touch with us about anything we have said in this show, please drop me an email, podcast@nsukp.co.uk, or we are on social, nsukpodcast, on Twitter X, or you find us on Facebook or find us on YouTube. Have I missed anything?
Nah, you're right on the money. So thank you very much for listening. Until next time.
Cheerio.
Au revoir.